of home were burning brightly when I left so long ago.
You're listening to Can't Do Nothing With Love, an award-winning short story collection written and read by Ellen Morris Pruitt. Today's episode features Rollerblader for Jesus. First I found my skates, and then I found Jesus. The skates, rollerblade skates, hadn't been missing that long, 2 days or something. I'd never known Jesus. Then he appeared there in the front closet where my mom's boyfriend, Jimmy, had thrown the skates, because I hadn't put them away like he said. I laced on the boots, pink laces and green wheels, and Jesus appeared in a pink cloud to tell me all would be fine. Skate on, he said. My mom doesn't like that kind of talk. She doesn't skate. She wears shoes like the ones I used to slip on my Barbie's feet when I was little. She totters around the kitchen so that Granny shakes her head and poo-poos. Jimmy likes the Barbie shoes. Barbie had strong, plastic calves. So does my mom. Not plastic calves, but strong from playing basketball in high school. We used to shoot hoops sometimes, but the ball never got near the goal. It would fall back on my shoulders and hit me around the head. I hated basketball. With rollerblade skates, the wheels are lined up one behind the other, just perfect. Like a knife edge. You're walking except you're gliding, unless you've hit a rough patch, which is just the way things are around here. Rollerblading is smooth, like melting ice. Like icing on a cake, sugary, heavenly. I don't want to hear any more talk about heaven or Jesus, my mom says. Still, I think it was a sign. Jesus talking like a surfer dude, except saying skate instead of rock, the real thing. So I decided to become a rollerblader for Jesus. My mom says, yeah, and before that, you wanted to retire the national debt. I only told that because Miss Warren, my fifth grade teacher, made us write down our dreams. A do-gooder. My mom called Miss Warren after the parent-teacher conference. She didn't like Miss Warren's hair. Miss Warren teases it a little so that it poofs in the back, but Miss Warren is really pretty. She's young like my mom, but new, out of college. She's here in Mississippi on the Teach for America program and started the Scholastic Achievement Award I'm working to win for the smartest person in the class. She tells us we can go to college anywhere, even out of state, wherever our dreams take us. She says there's a school in New York City where Lewis Granger, a boy in my class, who went for testing and found out he had perfect pitch, could just sing all day long. Miss Warren's not a do-gooder, she's a dream-gooder. And being a rollerblader for Jesus isn't a dream, it's a goal. My granny, who we live with, she has more fears than dreams. She doesn't look like she's scared unless you know that licking her lips means she's worried. Ever since Papa died, she rides around with a mannequin doll blown up in the front seat of the car so no one will think she's alone. The doll leans against the window. It can't sit up straight. It wears a wig. I don't know why Granny thinks anyone would believe the doll is a person. It's naked. But she buttons a sweater on it in the wintertime and one of her aprons in the summertime, an apron with a bib. Whenever Granny takes a turn too fast, the doll hits the window, knocking her wig cattywampus. Granny says to the doll, "Don't you complain, missy." When Granny's driving, she taps her brakes all the time. It makes everyone in the car sick to their stomachs. "Quit pumping," my mom yells. "You're making me sick." "Use the bib if you feel like upchucking," Granny says. Jimmy calls Granny Maw-Maw, even though her name is Granny. "Maw-Maw and her naked doll," he says, like it's something nasty. "Granny," I say. "Maw-Maw's not good enough for you, Miss Prissy Pants," he says. "That's what I call my Maw-Maw." Like Granny isn't her real name, or like she isn't even a real person, just the same thing everybody else has. We've been living at Granny's for a while. My mom and I moved in. Jimmy only visits. Sometimes, if Granny goes to bed early, Jimmy spends the night. I hear him tiptoeing out in the morning. Granny's floors creak and pop. They are linoleum, yellow squares. I peeled up the edge of a square once where it curled. Underneath was plywood, like what you would use to make a playhouse. Since I did that, the linoleum really curls, like the Wicked Witch's shoes after Dorothy lands on them in her house. All of the floors in Granny's house slope. If you let loose a marble, it will roll all the way until it plunks against the wall. My mom says, "Be grateful for a roof over your head." I don't wear my skates in the house, no matter what Jimmy claims, except for that time he threw them in the closet and I had to crawl in and get them. I always sit on the front steps and unlace the boots. The front step is painted, but peeling. Sometimes ants crawl in and out of the paint chips. Jimmy walks over me like I'm a step two, just taller. I'm bent over, unlacing the boot, and he lifts his leg. If I look, I can see the dirty sole of his shoe, chewing gum stuck on it, leaves and dog crap stuck on the gum. "Letting flies in," he says, and thunks me on the head to close my mouth when he realizes he can't claim I'm skating in the house or something. I used to worry about my mom dying because she's the only parent I have, and my granny might be so sad she'd say, "I'm too old and worn out," and the state of Mississippi would give me to a foster home to be raised with 11 other young'uns. My mom would lie in the hospital bed, wasting away with the cancer, her face white and drawn, upset she'd never get to see me win the Scholastic Achievement Medal for the entire fifth grade, not knowing I'd be in the foster home. And when you're living with 11 other young'uns in a foster home, winning the Scholastic Achievement Medal is the least of your worries. Then she'd die, and they'd have the funeral where Lewis Granger would come and sing sad, sad hymns in perfect pitch, and after that, I'd be all alone. Instead, my mom started wearing Barbie shoes, and now we have Jimmy. She says I need a hair of the dog when he's had too much to drink and his head hurts like hell, and he says brawl. It's bad enough to walk in the room and hear your mother's boyfriend talking about her bra, but for him to call it a brawl, he tells me, "Be good or else I'll run off to Vegas with your mama." He calls me Little Nail, even though my name is Raynell. I go by Ray. It was my daddy's name. He spelled it R-A-Y. I spell it R-A-E because I'm a girl. Jimmy says Little Nail like he's making fun. Jesus says, "Skate on." Jimmy blames my mom for the way I am. He says I arrived in this world a blank slate, and my wonko personality is my mom's handwriting on my soul. Granny says only a man would think children arrive in this world as blank slates. Why, when you weren't any bigger than a pea mite, you'd scoot your booty along the sidewalk trying to go places. You spoke a full sentence at 11 months. It helps to have Granny around, but mostly she says what she thinks to me, not Jimmy. Granny tells me she believes I saw Jesus in the front closet, really, but I can tell she's trying to be nice. Whenever I start to explain how I'm going to win the Scholastic Achievement Award for being first in my class, then smartest in my school, and win a full scholarship to a four-year college out of state, she rolls her lips against her gums and says, "That's counting chickens, that's what that is." I think about counting chickens when I'm on my skates, whizzing downhill and counting, "Here, chick, chick, here, chick, chick, chick." I spread my palms out for balance like Jesus walking on the water, Jesus and the faithless Peter, who said, "Oh, shit," and sank. Except Pastor Brevard never says, "Oh, shit." But if I were in a tiny boat and a storm was raging and the Son of God said, "Follow me," and I stepped out on the water and I began to doubt, and as I doubted, I began to sink, I'd be saying, "Oh, shit," as I went down. You never go down on rollerblades unless you hit a rock, and then that's gravity, not a lack of faith. It's hard to find a place to skate around here because there's not a lot of concrete. You got to be hitting the road, which is what Granny says my daddy did after I was born. In some places on the road where they've patched with tar, it's smooth as glass, and you fly until you hit the gravelly asphalt that makes your teeth chatter and clunks you around so much the trees and the grass and the fence line are all blurred from your head bobbing. But there's no such thing as a sidewalk on the rural route, and I don't know who would give me a lift to town where I could skate in the school parking lot, and still, it would be rough. When I hit a gravelly patch, teeth chattering, head knocking on my neck, I think, skate on. One time after my toe stubbed a pothole and I skinned my knee up pretty bad, I hitched a ride with Granny to the Piggly Wiggly. She thought I was being good company for grocery shopping, but I slipped the skates in the back seat to try out the parking lot at the Pig, or maybe next door at Denson's, where they sell ice cream and Cokes. I sat in the back seat because the naked doll was strapped in up front. When we stopped at the four-way, I saw Lewis Granger from school, and he saw me in the back seat, and he saw the naked doll in the front seat. I swear he knew it was a naked doll in an apron. Her lips are funny. Even if Lewis couldn't tell she was a doll, he could tell she was a weirdo. I skated in front of the house after that. If my mom sees me whirring by with my palms out, she calls, "For the love of Jesus, stop that!" For the love of Jesus, I skate on. With no one at home believing me, really, about seeing Jesus, I tell Miss Warren because she encourages you to contemplate your dreams. First, she got sidetracked on that, Jesus being a dream, but when she heard I'd crawled in the closet because Jimmy's head was pounding without his hair of the dog and he was mad as hell, she leaned back in her chair and her eyes narrowed. Usually, Miss Warren's eyes sparkle when I raise my hand and know the answer. Her eyes crinkle around the edges. But this time her eyes narrowed like she suspected something, and she sent a school officer out to our house, a man from the Neshoba County Superintendent's Office. The man set my mom down in the living room and asked her all sorts of questions. "That's personal," my mom said, and asked the man to leave. Because my mom wouldn't answer the questions, Miss Warren called me away from recess the next day and asked me her own questions, mostly about your mom's friend. I told her Jimmy had a dirty soul. "How do you know he has a dirty soul?" she wanted to know. "Because I've seen it. When I'm on the steps, he lifts his leg and straddles me, and I look up." She pursed her lips. "That's what I was afraid of." Then she hurried me back out to recess, like she wasn't afraid of that. She was afraid of me. I'd never thought before of Miss Warren as being fearful like Granny. She doesn't have a naked doll. I told that to the lady counselor the next week about Miss Warren and fear and the naked doll. The counselor had taken me out of science class to answer some more questions, even though science is my favorite subject, and we were studying about George Mendel and the peas and how the world came into full flower. You can't win a Scholastic Achievement Award unless you excel in science and understand the world as it turns. "A naked doll," the lady counselor said. She let her face go flat, like she didn't want me to see what she was thinking. "Your mom's boyfriend has a naked doll. In the house?" "Not Jimmy, Granny. It keeps her company since Papa died," I said. "Granny starts licking her lips, then she starts the pumping that makes everyone sick at their stomachs, and the doll gets banged but good." The next day, Miss Warren acted real skittish around me. When I could find a minute to myself with her, I asked if everything was okay. "Kind of, sort of," she said, which means not at all. I couldn't figure this out, but it had something to do with me seeing Jesus, which I also couldn't figure out because everyone talked about Jesus all the time. And what? No one expected him to show up? That makes no sense. Or maybe it wasn't him appearing, but my taking him serious enough to decide to be a rollerblader for Jesus. Or maybe it was because Miss Warren and the lady counselor and the man from the superintendent's office thought being a rollerblader for Jesus meant I had to give up my scholastic ambitions and never become the smartest girl in school or win a full scholarship to a 4-year college out of state. And I really resented that. All these people thinking Jesus would force me to make that choice. "Rollerblader or smartest girl in school," he'd say. "One or the other." No, he wouldn't. What he would say was, "Skate on." So I did. Then one day, while Jimmy was off doing his laundry, and Granny was over at Aunt Mary Beth's playing dominoes, and my mom was on the porch painting her toenails with wads of cotton stuck in between each toe, the whole group of unbelievers showed up. I was tromping up the hill. That's the trouble with whizzing down the hill. You have to tromp back up, sideways, so you don't slide. When they flew by in their car, a packed car, Miss Warren and the lady counselor and the superintendent man and other people I didn't know, everyone wedged in beside each other. No need for a naked doll in there. I was sweating pretty bad from going up and down the hill, and I didn't want Miss Warren to see me in such a mess. If any hope at all still existed, she would nominate me for the Scholastic Achievement Award. Plus, the sun was making me dinky in the head, shooting black spots into my eyes, like those little squiggles that are amoebas, except instead of being under a microscope, they were in the blue sky whenever I looked up. I needed a rest, but even more, I needed to get to the house to make sure that boatload of people didn't interrupt my mom while she was doing her nails. Fingernails, maybe. Toenails, never. Because it took so much concentration, and if she messed up, she had to wipe the whole thing off with polish remover and start all over again. My mom didn't need that. But by the time I made it back up the hill, the people were already crowded on the porch and in the yard, and my mom was standing up with the cotton between her toes, her hands on her hips. She saw me clumping across the yard, clumping in the scraggly grass, making the bugs fly, feeling like Frankenstein with my skates always so heavy when the smoothness was gone. She said, "Raynell, what have you told these people?" I wasn't sure I'd told them anything, but I thought back on it anyway. I couldn't come up with a fib in any of the answers I'd given to the questions they'd asked. There was something, though. Even Miss Warren was looking at me funny. The superintendent man stared, tapping his clipboard against his thigh. Then I started getting mad, all of them looking at me like that. "I saw Jesus, and I wanted someone to know," I said. "Like Lewis Granger wanting to tell everybody about having perfect pitch, and how he opens his mouth at the drop of a hat and sings, 'Perfect pitch.'" I lifted my heavy boot and stamped the stupid old grass. "I'm going to be a perfect pitch rollerblader for Jesus." Look at her legs, all the bruising, the lady counselor said. Like, just because I fell down every once in a while, I could never be a perfect pitch rollerblader for anyone, much less Jesus. What does that mean, Ray? Miss Warren was inching away from the group like she was about to bolt. A rollerblader for Jesus. In my free time, I said. Not when I should be studying for a test or doing extra credit or anything. I sidestepped toward Miss Warren, my wheels digging in the dirt. I didn't know, when it came to winning the Scholastic Achievement Award, whether you needed for the teacher to like you or not, or whether it was based on pure grades. I'd always thought Miss Warren liked me fine, but now I didn't know. I intend to win the Scholastic Achievement Award and go to a 4-year college on scholarship, out of state. And in the summers, I'm going to skate the country, being a rollerblader for Jesus, I told her. A trickle of sweat dropped in my eye. I blinked it out. The two people I didn't know were whispering behind their hands, and the lady counselor was raising her eyebrows, saying, "She feels a need to escape, and who can blame her? Look at this place." While my mom was taking the steps slowly, watching her feet so the cotton balls didn't get messed up, saying, "Raynell, what did you tell them about Jimmy and Granny's driving doll?" Calling it a driving doll instead of the naked doll. But she halted her walking when the lady counselor said the part about, "Who can blame her? Look at this place." It was bad enough. This group of important people gathered in my front yard, and all they wanted to talk about was dumb old Jimmy, who said laundry, and Granny's stupid necking doll, who rode around with her because she was too afraid to be out in the world alone, and now the lady counselor had said something that sounded rude to me. My mom must have thought the same thing, because she turned on the lady counselor and started yelling at her about my so-called friend, and who should drive up the driveway but Granny and her naked doll, and right beside her Jimmy, who got out of the car with the laundry basket in his arms, yelling at Granny for pulling in first, so he had to walk all the way with the full laundry basket, maybe dropping clean clothes on the grass, mouthing off until he saw all the people in the front of the house and me kind of sort of off to the side, and he yelled, "Raynell, what have you done?" Calling me by my real name now that it mattered. "I've told them about how you won't even go around me when I'm sitting on the steps, and how you step over me like I'm just another step, and I have to look at all the grody stuff on the sole of your shoe, and how dumb you are throwing my skates in the closet just because you've had too much to drink and your head is pounding, and how you can't even say dog right." I turned to the group. Ask him what that basket is he's carrying in his hands. I pointed at dumb old Jimmy standing with his mouth open, letting in flies. He looked down at the basket where he'd folded his clothes so neat, because he believes in keeping everything neat. "My laundry? What's wrong with that?" By this time, my mom was on my granny like white on rice, yelling at her about the driving doll, except now she was calling it the naked doll like she always did. How that stupid naked doll had gotten them into trouble with the people from Ray's school, damn it. That made my granny mad as hell, because no one tells her how to live now that Papa is dead. Why, she's a widow, for God's sakes. She waved her arm at the boatload of people that only kind of sort of included Miss Warren, because she was standing beside me now, a finger on her lips like she does when she's asked us the question and is waiting for some smart person to raise their hand with the answer. Then she knelt in the grass so she could be closer to my height. But I was taller than I usually was because of the skates, and so she had to rise back up and just bend forward. "Ray, is Jimmy a jerk?" I nodded my head. "And he can't say fog or bra or dog right." "But that's all?" she asked. "He's an idiot," I said. She smiled a little then with her eyes. "And you didn't really see Jesus in the closet. You just said that because you were mad at Jimmy for being a jerk." Now that Miss Warren and I were being friends again, and maybe the Scholastic Achievement Medal hung in the balance, I wanted to be able to tell her I had never seen Jesus. I'd made it all up. But I couldn't, because it wouldn't be true. I saw Jesus, in the closet, in a pink cloud. He told me, "Skate on." "Ray, how do you know it was Jesus?" she asked. Well, that was about the stupidest question I'd ever heard. But if someone thought Jesus could show up in your closet on a pink cloud and you not know whether it was him, I sure wasn't going to try to explain it to him. So I just said, "What difference does it make? I'm going to do what he says, even if it costs me the Scholastic Achievement Medal." Miss Warren held her hand up, palm out, like she does when someone gives her an off-the-wall answer to a question, and she's trying to decide if there's any truth in it. Then she straightened. "Well, what about you unlace your skates? and you and me go to Denson's for a Coke. You look hot as blue blazes. She laid her hand on my shoulder. Anyone who can skate on these rough roads and be the smartest girl in her class, both at the same time, she deserves a cold Coca-Cola. And maybe an ice cream? Maybe. I didn't mention the medal again because she'd said the smartest girl in her class, and that meant the medal, and you don't have to stomp all over something once you know it's true. I unlaced the boots and ran to put them in the front closet, squirming past my mom, who was yelling at the lady counselor again, and Jimmy, who was studying the superintendent man and saying, "You're a Jefferson from over in the Stratton community, aren't you?" When I opened the closet door, it was dark and quiet in there. I stepped in and waited a minute, then whispered, "You don't have to come again. I got it the first time." I lifted the boots and shook them, saluting the pink cloud that had been. "Skate on," I said. Then I went to Denson's with Miss Warren and ordered a double-decker ice cream, strawberry on bottom, chocolate on top. And when we saw Lewis Granger sitting at the counter, I didn't even wince when Miss Warren called him over to our table, and he sat down and opened his mouth and sang, his face stretched all rubbery underneath his freckles, his head thrown back. After all, anyone can tell you, Lewis Granger sings perfect pitch. Thanks for listening. Rollerblader for Jesus first appeared in print in Gulf Coast Literary Journal. To contribute to Memphis School of Servant Leadership, a charity devoted to a journey of intentional Christianity, please follow the link at can'tdonothingwithlove.wordpress.com or visit servantleadership-memphis.org. Message me on Facebook at Can't Do Nothing With Love. Our music, The Lights of Home, was written and sung by Mr. Rob Pate. Rock on, Rob.
Oh, he's the light of home. Thank you. Thank you very much.